Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Today, we're happily joined by actress and author Annabelle Gurwitch, author of the book of comedic essays about the foibles of being 50, entitled, I See You Made an Effort. Everyone says that 50 is the new 40, but according to Gurwitch, and I quote, 50 is still fucking 50. When men's phone numbers start to get replaced by AARP brochures, Gurwitch starts to panic. With a rocky marriage, facial injections, and musing on what could have been, the only thing Gurwitch seems to still have a grasp on is humor. For her, old school has become her school.
We'll find out about how Annabelle imagined a lusty affair with a 20-something working at the Mac store, but hesitated to finish the job because of all the erection killers strewn about her house. How do we middle-aged women cope with aging, sexuality, marriage, and trying to stay hip while not breaking your hip? Felicity Huffman of Desperate Housewives calls Annabelle's book a hoot and a holler, and we look forward to having her on the show.
Now, because of Gurwitch's schedule, we could only have her on the show for about 15, 20 minutes. After that, Betsy and I will talk about our thoughts on some of the issues in Annabelle's book. Annabelle, welcome.
Your book is hilarious, by the way.
Oh, thank you so much.
We really thoroughly enjoyed it. We really did.
Thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it because, you know, I do think that sense of humor is the great salve for so many things. It's, you know, I know that there's that statistic of how soon after a crisis people start making jokes. I mean, I really think it is the healthy way to cope with serious issues, which, of course, hitting middle age is it's a wake-up call. It is a splash of cold water in the face.
And it releases a lot of endorphins, too. When you laugh.
You know what's so interesting? I was just reading a study about how difficult it is to for people to recognize cross-culturally sounds because they're not sounds mean different things in different cultures. We once thought that it was so easy to interpret, except there's one sound that everybody understands, and that's laughter.
You know, it says in the scripture that a merry heart or laughter does better than a medicine. So there really is, by the way, truth in that when you laugh, you actually release this amazing serotonin and endorphins
right
to the brain, and it actually does heal the body and heal the soul.
But it's also very, very sexy. Aphrodite was the laughter-loving goddess.
Well, you know, that's why even not-good-looking comedians can always get laid, because the humor really goes a long way, particularly with the ladies.
Absolutely. That's usually, you know, that's the usually first thing that women ask for. You know, I do executive life coaching, and they ask for, I want a funny guy.
Yeah, it's so true. It's why a schlubby guy like Louis C.K. is so funny, but he has been married. He has got girlfriends in the show. He actually gets people to date him, of course, because he's so funny. It's a very endearing thing. But, you know, that is what I like to do. This is my third book, you know, I See You Made an Effort. It's my third book. And it is what I like to do, which is to take serious issues that are in the zeitgeist and find the humor in them. And I do that always through the lens of my own life. And because I am, you know, a cultural commentator, but I'm also in the culture. So I always write about my, you know, interfacing with these things. Like, my first book was about getting fired. My second book was about marriage.
Which is why, by the way, it was so enjoyable, because it was so authentic. And when you speak with that authentic voice, everyone loves it.
You know, it's funny because there's a saying and writing, I'm not sure who said this, but it's very true, I think, that the more specific you are, the more universal you can be. It's in the specifics that I think people find the commonality, even when you have a different experience within them. But, you know, something about that, I think that's why, you know, something like Seinfeld was really popular because, you know, like if you remember the show, Jerry had this crazy thing for cereals and he had all these different boxes. And I mean, I know that I look in my cabinet and it's the same thing. Aren't they kind of all the same? But no, you end up with all these different boxes of things that are almost exactly the same. And I do, you know, aspire to try to find the humor in those little details. I mean, I'm not someone who's writing about the larger scope of the world.
So along those lines, tell me your experience. What was it like when you turned 50? Now, that's not middle age. It's three quarters age. We usually drop dead by that.
Three quarters age now. Okay, you know, when I hit, let me just say, 40s were very good for me. I was really like, yeah, this is happening. I was really one of those people who was saying, oh, 40 is the new 30 and all that kind of thing. And I felt really good. But as I got closer to 50, I really started to feel this dread of the age approaching. And it had to do with a number of things. I mean, some of them are just biological. I was going into a perimenopause kind of early for at least my family and peers. And so these hormonal dips that I would have, which would just send me into these like careening mood swings and the crying and the end of my fertility, that really sends a message, particularly if you're a woman, of like, wow, there's an expiration date to this life. I mean, it's not just that, oh, I see there's crow's feet, but there's a real feeling and there's a real biological effect that I saw with so much dread. And everywhere around me, I kept seeing signs that I felt were showing me that I was becoming less visible in the employment world, to people younger than me. And I had so much dread that it was starting to become funny. I mean, I would just realize, oh my gosh, you know, no one is noticing me. I'm at a concert and I'm completely invisible, except when I tried to dance and my son, of course, freaked out. And every time I would come up against these feelings, I would find the humor in it, as well as the dread. And I just started writing these stories down. And for me, it started to help me when I started to see that I could turn this into stories about the moments when you realize your life has changed. Like when you are jumping on a trampoline and suddenly everything in your body hurts, and the next day you find yourself at a rheumatologist's office. I'm like, rheumatologist? Am I that old? Are we there yet? And the answer turned out to be yes.
Annabelle, did you try to change it? Did you try to do anything about the fight the 50s?
Well, you know, of course. I mean, first of all, I did start, you know, hormone replacement therapy, and I started a meditation practice, and I got some Botox, and I did all these things. And, you know, in the book, I write about it, and I try to write about it with a lot of honesty, because I think everybody else is wondering, what's everybody else doing out there? What is she doing? What's he doing? And, you know, part of that, I feel, is the whole drumbeat to try to stay young is really different than the drumbeat to try to be embrace where you are. And that's ultimately what I came to, was I ultimately felt like, wait a minute, 50 is not the new 40. 50 is still 50. I have 50-year-old problems. I've got parents who have to sell their house. I've got a rheumatologist. The AARP is beating down my door.
That's how you know life is coming to an end. Okay, so let me ask you this. How did it affect your marriage, and what kind of midlife crisis did you go through? Did you try to make up for lost time?
you know, like many women I know, I was like, I'm going to start sleeping on the couch. I'm pissed off about, you know, the way that you leave your coffee mugs out. I mean, just the littlest things were driving me crazy. And I mean, I have to say, there's a story in the book about going to sleep over at my friend Chris's house and, you know, imagining another life for myself. Look, some people actually go out and get another life for themselves. But the big midlife crisis for me, and this is something that I think is really the subtext of the book. I mean, my book is not a how-to. If anything, I always say never do anything someone who's been an actress does. You know, that's like, it's like a how not to book. But ultimately, I decided that I had to really dedicate myself to finding more moments of joy. And I know that sounds a little cliche, but I actually did a number of things. Like, I did start a meditation practice. And let me just say, it pisses me off. I hate it every second that I do it, but it does actually help my life. I also started exercising more because that gives you those good hormones, but I hate going to the gym. So I started playing tennis with my girlfriends, and that gives me more girlfriend time, which I feel like I really need. I need the sisterhood at this age. I don't know. It seemed really important to me. So I get more exercise and I get to see my girlfriends. And I know I have like 2 standing dates with them a week when we play tennis together. I joined a choir, which is just the most unlike me. It's a non-denominational choir because I remain an atheist. And so I've actually really done things in my life that have made me happier. And I've also just embraced the age, and I stopped trying to sort of turn back the clock. And instead, I'm working with the clock now. And one of the things I did actually, which is just totally did not work out at all, which was that I had these business cards printed up for the book, and it said Annabelle Gurwitch since 1961. I'm like, I'm throwing down the gauntlet. I'm gonna announce my age. Unfortunately, on these cards, I put an email address that I can't remember the password to, so I can't hand those cards out, but it was a good idea.
One of the funniest parts of your book was your adventure with the love coach, and that's one of the sources of joy you rejected, and I thought that was horribly funny.
You know, what's really funny is that I was just thinking about that this morning. The story about the love coach, I went and took a workshop on sort of like reclaiming your femininity. And I actually, the whole thing, it made my eyes roll of like, it was like a magical man makeover for women to take. But yet, I felt like she really had something to say. And, you know, I mean, it is a funny story about online profiles and dating at this age and how women and men are all trying to figure out how to look on our time dating site. But I actually felt like there was something to what she said. And I think about her advice a lot about how we as women have lost touch with our femininity, and as it's sort of a byproduct of feminism. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, you say out of touch with your sensuality. I was just at a conference in New York here, devoted to the same thing. 350 uh-huh. women were at this symposium about how to reclaim their sensuality, and they were all ages. It was fantastic.
Well, you know, as you hit middle age, you know, and you enter the Eileen Fisher years of drapey sweaters and pleated khaki pants, which they have in the AARP emails, you can start to feel, as I say in the book, like an elder council in a dystopian science fiction movie. So, you know, you these clothes, the truth is, you know, you don't look the same. I've say in the book, I've aged out of my wardrobe, which is really true. But, you know, then you have to find a new way to be, a new way to dress, a new kind of sexuality. I mean, I think that is one of those weird things about this age, is that it's not unlike being just out of college, where there's this moment in time where really there's so much ahead of you and you don't know exactly how you're going to do this life yet. And I think middle age for us now, because we know for many of us, most of us in the Western world at least, we're going to be living longer, but we are at this different stage in life where certain things do fall away. You know, if you have the same, you know, energy towards everything in your life at every moment of your life, it just wouldn't be appropriate. And different things are happening. So, for instance, now I've got a teenage kid. I'm not in the beginning of like my reproductive years and having a baby. I have to now, my kid is 16. He wants nothing to do with me. So I have to start thinking about we're, you know, becoming an empty nester. I'm heading towards that. So I've got to find a new thing to do with the way with, you know, I mean, I work, but also I had a great deal of my identity wrapped up in being volunteer mom at school. And now that is, you know, that's starting to come to a close. I got a little bit more time with that. And then that's going to leave me. And I can see that in my sights. And I am not, you know, I said goodbye to my fertility. I'm not having more children. And it's like that moment when you're just out of college. What am I going to do? How am I going to do it? Where do I fit in? How do I remain visible in the world? And all these stories in the book are about those things. And I find that, I mean, you know, all my friends who are really the same age, we're all asking us the same questions. And it looks different on different people. Some people have like left their career behind, they're reinventors. Some have left their husbands and family behind, gotten new husbands.
So what do you think about that? What do you think about the women who get, you know, all antsy and they divorce and they try to be with a younger person to hold on to the youth? Would you tell them, don't hold on to anything, just keep on growing and find some wonderful thing about the age that you are? What would your advice be?
Well, that is my message about fine. You've got, I think, you know, there's this anxiety that's created, which is, of course, fueling the billion-dollar cosmeceutical and plastic surgery industry. Of course, let me just say, I'm getting some Botox later today, so I am definitely a person who's trying to walk the middle road of, like, I don't judge anyone. You know, I mean, I'm trying to walk the middle path, because when you're 50, no, 50 is not the new 40. No one who's 40, when you're 50, thinks you're the same age as them. You're not fooling anyone, and you're only making more anxiety for yourself. I think there's something different between trying to hang on to youth and trying to, you know, occupy the space that you're actually in. In terms of people who, I mean, a friend of mine decided she was gay after two marriages and three children at this age. I don't judge anyone and the choices they make, because I think for different people, there's different choices. I do think that, like in my book, there's a story about my fantasy of running off with my Apple genius at the Apple store. I think that is not well advised. That's going to end poorly. You know, I don't judge.
Well, just to cheer you up, 60 is the new 59.
And also, it gets better. Believe me, I've been there, seen it, and done it. And you're going to slough off everything that's insignificant in your life and focus on the best stuff. Really, the best really is to come.
Well, that I think is really true. However, let me just tell you one thing that does not get better. I can't eat anymore, because every time I eat something, if I look at a croissant, I gain 5 pounds. So, you know, when people...
Don't look at it. Just eat it without looking.
Yeah. You know, there's certain things do not get better. You know, this eating thing, the middle spread, there is nothing good about that. Let me just say that. That is just, you know, the only thing good about that is that Spanx are out there. And Spanx really do work. I love my Spanx. But other than that, on that level, no, I would say that does not get better. Mm, but you have to just laugh about that.
Yeah. It's going to be fantastic, believe me.
Annabelle, your book was terrific, and so much, I thank you so much for giving us your time. I know that.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, if people go to my website, which is AnnabelleGurwitch.com, you can see my touring schedule because I'm out all the time on the road, and I love to meet readers, and I also perform stories from this book, and it's really fun for me to meet people when I come out and to also hear other people's stories. So I hope people will go to the website and catch me when I come to your town or city or Botox clinic.
Stay funny. I agree with your doctor.
You're terrific.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Annabelle. Let me jump into this. Okay. Is she right? Because I don't necessarily find women in their 50s losing their sexuality or sensuality. And in fact, I see it growing into the 60s and 70s. I don't see it dissipating.
You're absolutely right. I mean, there is a study of women from age 60 to 91, and 72% always reach orgasm. Who could imagine a thing like
right.
that?
Right. I think women are historically, meaning it's women, men, well, women have everything in the beginning. I mean, they just control the power of the vagina just controls everything. And somewhere in the 30s and 40s, in early 50s, you know, the men seem to be more dominant because the women tend to be more fearful. But after that, I see the women dominating again.
I don't know. I think there's a huge energy boost that comes with menopause. I don't think she's right that you lose creativity and inventiveness.
I don't either.
And I think she has nothing to worry about except a really bright future because you acquire a tremendous amount of wisdom when you're 50 years old, and that comes in very handy.
Well, see, she can't lose because the women who are 50, 60, 70, they're going to be speaking out, buying the book to see how they could disagree with her, and the ones who identify with her are going to be buying the book because they identify with her.
Right.
So she's winning all the way around.
Right, and making them laugh. This is one of the funniest books I've ever read. And the way she transmutes all of these miserable episodes, including her best friend's death and her mother's displacement and breast cancer and all that sort of thing, the way she turns it around into comedy is extraordinary. It really is, without taking away any of the seriousness of the subject matter, because there is really a serious substance to this book.
Well, that is actually the wisdom of life, to be able to look at things dead on and to laugh at them as you see them.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, without a doubt. So you have a lot of experience, you know, in your studies about women in their 50s and women who are seductresses, and they don't lose their power of seduction at 49, correct?
Correct. I mean, I have a whole chapter on silver foxes in seductress, and I profile lots of women who, after 40, 50, were dynamite with men. And Mae West is a perfect example. Here's somebody stuck in Hollywood. She never got to Hollywood till she was 40 years old. And we don't think of her that way, but it's true. And here was a real elder siren. I mean, she had men in battalions wherever she turned. And she's just one of many. I read this ancient Greek book, and he lists 20 really, really hot older women who were seductresses. So it's been going on for a long time.
So though the truth of the matter is that women actually get really uptight about their age. And I have seen, believe it or not, I've seen teenagers go through anxiety attacks turning 20.
Why?
Okay,
what's going on?
Because what's going on is we've created a culture where youth is what everyone looks at as being perfect. And again, this is our obsession, mm-hmm. our projection, in the same way that in certain communities, particularly in the Syrian and Persian Jewish community, if you're not thin, or in the Protestant community, if you're not thin, there's something wrong with you. as opposed to, you know, having some meat on the bones and having personality and being passionate, that weight, you know, plays so much of a central role, where it's, to me, it's just absurd. Now, of course, you want to be within a healthy weight so that you know, your cholesterol and heart and so on and so forth. But this obsession with weight, this obsession with age, causes people not to be able to enjoy today.
It's a media pop culture myth.
Which is going to change eventually.
Which is propaganda.
It is complete propaganda. And the truth of the matter is that when you go back, you know, it has changed many times over the years. It changes also when you look at certain cultures where African women very often are larger women and appreciated for their larger size, you know, and in some cultures, Hispanic women as well. I think that it has created a generation of eating disorders, a generation of identity disorders, of depression. And you know what? I think it's all bullshit.
It's all toxic.
It's incredibly, incredibly toxic.
And hence this love coach, the way that she can get women to plunk down thousands of dollars to reignite their self-esteem and to make themselves feel sensual again. That's really sad.
It's really sad. You know, read the freaking book. You know, I mean, just think about it. It's the way you choose to look at yourself. But what it takes is the ability that most people don't have, is to step away from all those loud noises and find their own voice that says, you know what, this is crazy.
But what about prejudice? I mean, isn't there a lot of ageism right now that we haven't seen previously?
Well, it's interesting, meaning in Asian culture, the older you are, the wiser you are, and the more you were respected, okay? And today, you know, in business, if you hit a certain age, you're outdated. It's hard to get a job. So there is a tremendous amount of prejudice, and it's so – I mean, if you think about it, the person who's – I'd rather hire someone, you know, who's 50, 60 if I had that kind of company, because they have so much more to bring to the table, so much more experience, and they have better work ethics.
Right. But look what it's doing to so many women. I mean, we're deforming women with all of this plastic surgery. I was at the center of Park Avenue with my daughter, and in front of us were three people, an older woman and a little boy, 5, and his nanny. And as we were waiting for the traffic to go by, the little boy said to the woman, "Nice facelift, lady." He's 5 years old. And this woman looked identical to every other woman on the street.
And you know
what? So we're cloning a group of right. women who look perfectly weird.
And you know what? This is the truth. Most of the time, unless there's a deformity, an accident, or you know, something that really is not symmetrical in a mm-hmm. severe way, most people don't look better after plastic surgery.
Yeah, well, as she says, you don't look younger. You don't. You just look pulled.
you look Silicon Valley. You know.
Right. But again, she's in California. And do you think that California is more beauty obsessed, especially the acting world?
Yes.
Than New York City, for example?
I think it's more than New York City, because I think New York City appreciates the intellectual side of things.
Yes.
But I do think it's a lot of times it's also cultural. Mm-hmm. Different cultures place different values on weight.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are some cultures, you know, where a very large backside is incredibly sexy, and others, they mm-hmm. want, you know, the smaller tush. Mm-hmm. The problem is when they place this on their children, mm-hmm. you know, and when parents punish or reward their children based upon how much they weigh. This is, it's disheartening, because this is why we have tremendous amount of eating disorders, mm-hmm. you know, in Western Europe and in the United States.
Yep. And in my generation, we had training bras starting when we were 10 years old. And if you don't think that led to people having breast augmentations, of course it did.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Well, and again, it was the fixation with larger breasts are somehow more sensual, which You know, most guys, if you ask them, they'll basically tell you, you know, more than a mouthful is, you know, is plenty. You know, you know, it's a waste of time. You know, so
right.
It's really what's in a person's psyche.
Yeah. And it's also the toxic culture that we're dealing with right now that's really, really hard on women over 50. I mean, I scarcely know anyone over 50 who doesn't have a facelift. And I have three friends I can't tell apart. So
that's really amazing.
They all go to the same plastic surgeon, and they've all got their ideas of beauty, and they impose them on these faces. And
Betsy, you know what's the funny thing about it is? They don't even know who they're wanting to attract. I think the idea is the women are looking to attract one another or to get the approval from one another that you look good. You know, and they
rather than men.
Right, rather than men. They're not doing it for the men. Because at the end of the day, if there's a real intimacy, you know, if there's a real closeness, if there's a real bond, that's the sexual dynamic.
Well, that was in this wonderful book. She goes to the love coach, and the love coach takes them to a lingerie store, and she buys herself some lacy little underwear and puts them on for her husband. He doesn't even notice. He looks at her and says, "What is that?" Totally bored. It's not a turn-on. What is probably a turn-on in their marriage, most of all, is the comedy and the humor between them. I certainly got that impression that there's a lot of back and forth and gaiety in their marriage.
It's true. If you pick someone that you could banter with, that you could have fun with, you know, just the, you know, rather than sitting in silence all the time. Sometimes silence is good, but the ability to sit across a table and mm-hmm. actually have a conversation, you know, I feel bad because some couples simply sit across a table and say nothing.
Yep. At the conference that I was at this weekend speaking, somebody raised their hand in the audience and said, "Conversation is foreplay in my marriage." And I thought that was really interesting.
I absolutely agree. And it's not only foreplay, it should be afterplay.
Okay, definitely.
Because the conversation after orgasm is almost as important as the conversation before.
Yeah.
You know, the jumping out of bed and running to the bathroom is just not sexy.
No. Yeah, right. I think Annabelle would have something very funny to say about that. I can imagine a scene she would create.
Has she created one in her book?
No, but I can just imagine we're feeding her wonderful material.
Talk to me about grandmother hypothesis. You know, the concept that as hormones decrease, that the need to nurture and love increases, and therefore a lot of that energy goes to the grandchildren. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Maybe for some people. I just hate generalities because I think everybody is unique. Everybody has very specific needs, very specific erogenous zones, and so forth. I'm not a grandmother. I can't imagine getting any kind of estrogen boost from a toddler screaming around the house. I just don't see it happening. But maybe it would. Who knows?
I completely agree with you. I think it's a generality.
I don't like generalities.
And that's the problem. The problem is that some people love being parents. Other people just be parents because they feel if they didn't, they'd be weird.
No, I'm crazy about my daughter, you know? But I'm not sure I'd get any estrogen hit from a baby in the household right now.
Well, it's not like a dog.
I mean, the dog's enough trouble.
No, I love my dog. Yeah, it's on my iPhone.
Mine, too. I was just going to say something about the acting world and how hard it is for women in both Hollywood and New York to have parity with men when it comes to acting roles. And I wondered if that in any way slanted some of Annabelle's writing.
I think that's why I appreciate honestly, foreign film much more than an American film, mm-hmm. because in foreign films, very often the romance, the sensuality, mm-hmm. doesn't stop at 40 or 50 or 60 or 70.
Right.
You know, and it's much more realistic. There's a lot of romance going on in nursing homes.
Exactly. Okay?
You know, so what happens here is that we have this youth culture. And I think to some degree it's going to get played out like anything else, that people, there's a small window of this absolute perceived perfection. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, if you look close enough, there's no perfection at any age.
No.
That's all a myth as well.
Yes.
You know, people have nice features, and nice simply means that it's nice to someone. Other people like different features. You know, so I think that. Women in Hollywood are punished for their age much more than men.
Yep.
I don't see that in European films per se. But in America, just like in the job market, age becomes a limitation rather than an asset. And that's pretty sad.
It's too bad because it robs women's faces of character, which is what so many directors complain about, is the fact that women are having Botox now and they can't express emotion on film and they can't use them. So what we want to get back to, I think, is women who have expressive faces and expressive voices and expressive characters, all of those things.
Not only that, here's the question. Do you want to play to a person's fantasy or to their real life? Okay, well, I think if you touch a person's real life, it's just more entertaining and just more riveting. You know, a lot of these adventure movies where people fall down 14 flights of steps and then they get up and they run.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you don't fall down 14 flights of steps or get blown up in a car,
yeah,
and then you're running for another 10 miles. It's just an adrenaline rush, but leaves you with nothing left.
Right, and fantasies are culturally manufactured anyway. I mean, the whole idea that we were just talking about, youth, beauty, and so on, are sexually attractive. It's really not the heart of it anyway. I mean, because love is a head trip. We all know that. And I think it was George Bernard Shaw who said, who looks at beauty after it's been in the house for 3 days? there's a principle. It's called ubiquity dulls vision. That is to say, if someone is gorgeous, curb appeal, zow, you know, for the first 5 minutes. But then the next 10 minutes, the next day, 3 days later, a week later, it all begins to fade, and it begins to be more important what this person has to say and who they are.
Oh, I cannot tell you how many clients, and this is sad, who've just told their girlfriends, do me a favor, don't talk. Things are better that way. That's kind of sad, you know.
Yeah, women would do well to spend more time with their Kindles than at the gym. I mean, they... You know, to cultivate your mind and not your body.
I do find something that's very endearing. I love the fact that women can and do group together and really offer a lot of love and support, where I don't see men doing that as much. You know, hardly at all, because they don't like to talk about anything personal. They'll share fishing stories and they'll share whatever, you know, if they're doctors, they'll share medicine, but they don't share their heart. And I think that women have a tremendous advantage, that they're much more open to share, you know, the depths of their pain and suffering and trials, mm, with one another. And very often it's all the therapy they need.
Why is that so? Why are men so reserved with each other? Why don't they just...
Because what happens is that they believe that they lose status, and that there's this constant aggression or assertiveness to maintain a position of status and power. So to say I have anxiety or fear, or I'm jealous that my wife's going to leave me, causes, mm-hmm, them to believe that all of a sudden they now are looked at differently, and they're not perceived with the same status, which, to be honest with you, is usually true.
They take off their armor when they confess feelings.
Absolutely. And because men are not more generous than women, where women will pick on one another and tomorrow be friends, what happens is when you lose the perception of one's value by another man, it's very tough to get back. There's one way of getting it back.
Money.
No, it's not giving a shit.
There you go.
You know, the more you don't care, the more you're independent in your own thoughts and feelings, that's when you get back everything plus
right.
then. And right. money is the second thing.
Right. No, I was only thinking of the competitive instinct among men, which women are developing now, but has not been so prominent in the past.
Yes. Meaning, you know, women who compete in a man's world often find it difficult to deal with other women.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and they bring that male aggression into their female relationships, and sometimes it doesn't go very well.
Exactly. It's a wrong model to imitate.
There are a lot more questions than there are answers. That's for sure.
Exactly, and I love the fact that that Annabelle asks so many fascinating questions and raises so many issues that are on women's minds today. They're trying to navigate this really unplanned, uncharted territory. And it's extremely hard, I think, to be 50 and to suddenly face the loss of fertility, perimenopause, difficulties with a teenage child. All of these things, the sandwich generation, these are serious issues. And she addresses them all with more brains and more wisdom than you would think when you first read the book. Because when you read the book, your first response is laughter. It's beautifully, beautifully written with tons of wonderful one-liners. But then after you put it down, you realize, wow. This is full of a lot of good advice for a lot of women reaching 50.
Which it goes back, you know, to my theory that good advice is short advice.
There you go.
Know, the shorter, so many of these books, you know, these self-help books that are hundreds of pages long, they should be a 3-page article because that's really all that is
that's
contained
right.
in them. And that 3-page article, to be honest with you, most people will read and remember, and
right.
there'll be more posterity.
Right. Well, you teach through laughter. There's some quote about that somewhere.
Well, hopefully we'll get Annabelle again here sometime soon.
There you go. Or if she's performing in New York, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, it would be great. We could bring our mics and interview her on the spot.
There you go.
I want to once again thank Annabelle Gurwitch for appearing on our show. She's a busy lady. Go out and pick up a copy of her book if you want to laugh. I See You Made an Effort, Compliments, Indignities, and Survival Stories from the Edge of 50. Also, be sure to check out her website, iseeyoumadeaneffort.com. I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Betsy and I both want you to remember, to every problem, there is a solution. Please check out our other episodes. You're going to love them. They're on www.gluckradio.com. And if you haven't already, buy Betsy Prelow's books on the art of seduction on Amazon.com. They're entitled Seductress and Swoon. Now they're out in paperback, and you know what that means. Keep listening and keep sending in your feedback. Till next time.